The six demon bag.
Terrific. A six demon bag. Sensational. What's in it, Egg?
Wind, fire, all that kind of thing.
Hey guys, this is Ed. This is the Six Demon Podcast, in which we throw six topics or more in a bag and to kind of keep things moving, randomly draw one out and go from there. I'm the author of about 10 novels, working on 11, and I'm here with Ryan, who is, you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Ryan. I'm an editor, and I like to make things.
My name is Jeff. I'm also a writer, and I write horror and science fiction, and I like to do weird hobbies, and I like to do the Freddy.
My name is Andrew.
Andrew, speak into the...
My name is Andrew, and I'm constantly prompted by people which mic to speak in.
Because you got those velvet pipes.
Owner of the velvet pipes.
Yes, and harvester of souls.
Alright, what do I got here? Ooh, ouch, my bones. Tales of injury.
Well, you guys see this?
The listener does not see that.
Wait, well, let's describe it.
Drew is showing us a terrifying, hideous...
It looks like New Hampshire, kind of.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, scar on his shoulder.
I'd like to think that is a treasure map, and if we look at your back, we can find out how to get to dry land.
The treasure is Drew's psyche.
A very interesting thought, but this is not that story. This is for a different time. So, my grandmother was an old woman.
As most grandmothers are.
I'm talking about she was born in 1897.
Oh, my.
Oh, but Jan.
It is quite an old lady.
Yes, and so she had a lot of things in her yard, like...
Civil War cannons.
Drew's story takes place in Manacles. 1898. So I'm talking about
like the kind of like rub boards and the hand crank wringer washing machine type stuff. Okay. And she had an old station wagon that she kept stuff stored in. And, you know, we would play in the backyard, usually barefoot, and we were playing on top of the station wagon. And I slid down the front windshield and my foot slid right on the windshield wiper blade and took like...
They were actual blades in those days.
Yes. So I remember screaming and yelling and trying to get back into the house, but, you know, it's a yard with lots of dirt and gravel and stuff, and those were getting into my fresh wounds. And I don't remember a whole lot of what happened between then and when I was at the hospital and they were trying to hold me down as they were giving me the tetanus shots in my foot. But they were trying to clean the wound and do all sorts of other stuff. And all I can remember is that I'm being held down by people with surgical masks, screaming as I'm looking at the ceiling as they're doing stuff to my foot. Hmm. And that was one of the numerous stories of injuries that I have that I will share in the future.
One man's nightmare, another man's fantasy.
Yeah. So I'm thinking it's time for me to get another tetanus shot before
So what the hell happened to your shoulder?
Oh.
He just wants the treasure, Drew.
Ooh, ow, ouch. My bones.
Oh, why is that back in the bag?
Ed.
Sorry.
Flight or invisibility?
The oldest question in the world. If you could choose between the power of flight or the power of invisibility, which would you choose? Ed.
Flight. And I know this is a trick question that tells me something about myself psychologically, depending on what
gay.
I pick. Yes.
Sorry.
And invisibility means that I would be introverted, but flight means that I'm extroverted, right?
So you're gaming the system. It doesn't work anymore.
No, but I would have picked flight anyway, because what are you going to do with invisibility, really? You know,
in the girl's locker room. That's pretty much it.
I know, but...
What are you going to do with flight?
Fly?
Flight? You fly to...
Avoid gridlock?
Yeah, avoid gridlock.
Be joyful always.
Yeah, put on shows, fly around naked.
Get bugs in your teeth. You could only fly around naked if you also had invisibility.
On a rainy day, fly above the clouds.
Sure.
You wouldn't be able to breathe, though.
Flight's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. All right.
You just get to enjoy the sensation of flying.
Yeah, but what if you get hit by, like, a plane or something?
Well, there we go. Now we're getting realistic again.
Yeah.
Just avoid planes, I guess.
Yeah, I would say definitely avoid planes.
And buzzards.
What's Drew? Well, since I already have the power of invisibility, flight.
Oh, I can't believe in myself. Certainly I'm up on top of the world. I wish it was somebody else. Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. I never thought I'd be so free. Flying away on a wing and a prayer. Who could it be?
Believe it or not, it's just me.
That's the one. That was the
fuck. One. Yes. Pick the next topic. God
damn. Damn it, guys. It says sing 80s
show tunes.
Fuck.
Dreamlands. Waking dreams, terrible nightmares, recurring dreams, and dreamscapes.
Now, did you have dreams of flight? Did you ever dream of flight?
Yeah, always.
I never really dreamed of flight. I dreamed a lot of falling until a few years ago. Then I never really dreamed I was flying. I dreamed I could jump really high.
That's what I dreamt of too, Drew. Exactly, like the Hulk.
Yeah, so it's like I could jump like for several miles at a time, but I couldn't quite maintain my altitude.
Right, that's what I like, old school Superman. Yeah, that's always what I dream too, like I'm jumping over traffic or something, but never flying. I always come down, but slowly so I can control it. You know?
Now, in my dreams, when I would fly, I would kind of scoot around on my butt, like I would hover with my legs out in front of me.
Like a dog on a carpet?
Actually, higher than a dog on a carpet, like a person on a swing. And then I was talking to someone at work, and they were saying that when they had dreams about flying, they would swim through the air. And I said, well, I think when I would fly around on my butt, it's because my body's sensation of weightlessness was being on a swing.
Mm-hmm.
And for him, he was a swimmer. Mm-hmm. And his early childhood memories of weightlessness were swimming. And I thought,
equate the sensation.
I wonder in your dream if your body equates weightlessness with whatever modality you use to achieve weightlessness.
Well, so, Drew, I think the jumping must be video games because there's a lot of zero G.
You would double
settings
jump
in video games and the Halo and stuff.
When I was younger, I used to have a reoccurring nightmare where I was on these rooftops and I was trying to escape from this black shadowy elephant ghost type creature that was chasing me. And every time it would almost catch me, I would wake up. And shortly after I got out of high school...
Wait a minute, Drew. I hate to interrupt you. Will you pull up your sleeve again? It's a black shadowy elephant creature.
It is.
Oh, shit. It does look kind of an elephant. Like an elephant.
And shortly after I got out of high school, I had that dream one more time, but this time it didn't look as big as it used to be, and I didn't feel a need to run from it anymore. I just kind of stood there and stared at it, and it just got smaller and smaller and smaller, and that was the last time I had that dream.
Nice.
So I don't exactly know what it was really all about. I guess it was me saying, fuck you, I'm out of here to high school.
I had this recurring dream that was extremely eerie because I think there was no sound. It was purely visual, and it was almost like a first person perspective. Part of my house had this weird high ceiling, and so
good for Christmas trees, bad for dreams.
Excellent for Christmas trees. You're great. You're right.
Non-Euclidean. Great for Hounds of Tindalos.
Yes, a non-Euclidean roof. Excellent for Christmas trees. Terrible for dreams. Because when I was very, very young, I would have this dream that I would get up out of my bed, and that's what, you know, really gave this dream a disturbing quality, is that the dream started with me getting out of bed, going to my door, silently opening the door, silently walking down the hall, climbing up onto the banister, staring down at the entryway hall below, and then leaning forward and falling into space.
Ugh.
It was really creepy. There was like nothing to it except suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this recurring dream, and it was totally silent.
Mm.
Man, it was a fucking creepy dream.
Mm-hmm. I had a constant recurring dream of throwing myself down my stairs, and I would always wake up. It was that moment where you kick yourself awake.
Jerk awake, yeah.
But it always, when I was a kid, always was followed or preceded by me throwing myself down the stairs in the dream.
Hmm. I had one recurring dream that I can think of, and it was in my neighborhood, which is like a south suburban, you know, south of Chicago neighborhood, Calumet City, where the Blues Brothers are from. And I'd be walking through the neighborhood, and over the rooftops, I would see tripods walking, like from War of the Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
But not the freaking floating ones like in the movie, but the milk stool ones, like from the Classics Illustrated comic. And in them was this kid in my class in grade school. He was in the hood. I could see him behind the glass and everything, piloting it. And it was a kid that all the kids at school used to kind of pick on and everything. And he was a kid that I was sometimes... This was a guilt dream, because I was sometimes friendly with this kid. But yet, he was one of those kids that would, like... When the kind of microscope of peer pressure or whatever was turned on me, I would kind of, like, deny being friends with, you know, like that. And basically...
Flies in the face of your story from last episode.
Exactly, yeah. Because in middle school, I was a prick. But he would... and he was basically hunting me in this thing with a bunch of tripods and stuff. And my mother and I would end up running in a dump in like a junkyard. And he would catch me, and he'd shoot me with a ray, and I would turn into a snake. And the snake would, like, just... I would wriggle into the bottom of the garbage, and, like, my mother would be crying.
Wow.
Yeah, and I had it, like, three times. It was always creeped me the fuck out.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a really, like...
Big budget dream.
Guilt-ridden dream for me.
Nice.
I constantly, over and over and over again, dream that I was being chased by wolves through the woods behind my house. And I couldn't really run. I think a lot of people have dreams where that you can't really run, your legs don't quite work.
Yeah.
Or you fall. And apparently the chased by wolves trope is like a big deal in dreams. Like, a lot of people dream of being chased by wolves.
Well, for tens of thousands of years,
I
think humans and their primate ancestors were chased down and devoured by wolves.
In
the waking world.
One universal dream that I always have is my teeth falling out.
Eek.
And it's very vivid. Like, I wake up depressed that my teeth are gone. And I'm like, feel it with my tongue. And I'm like, oh, fuck, good, they're still there. But I can feel them crumbling. Some of them go down my throat. I mean, it's really bad.
Ew. Nerd heresy.
All right. The time has finally come.
Yeah, I want to hear Jeff's nerd heresy, which is a little bit of Ryan's nerd heresy, too, because I know you two guys haven't even seen Rogue One.
I have seen Rogue One.
You did see Rogue One?
I did. I saw it.
In the interim?
But that leads us to the larger point, which is I'm out. When it comes to Star Wars, I don't care anymore. I waited so long between Jedi
and Phantom Menace.
And Phantom Menace. And I was so excited. And I was working at Fox at the time. And I got to see a special advanced screening for employees only on the Fox lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so excited going in.
You probably psyched yourself up in front of the big Star Wars mural.
I did. I was like electric. How excited I was to see a new Star Wars movie. and watching the Fox logo play with the music at Fox was like the culmination of all my dreams. And that movie was such soul-crushing dog shit that I walked out like stunned. Like I couldn't feel my feet. I don't think I even found my car for like the first hour. I was so utterly
shell-shocked
and disheartened that I kind of watched part two like a whipped dog coming back to its owner. Like I knew I was going to get beat again, but I just had to go back. And the third one I kind of watched at home on DVD, you know, with an eyebrow cocked, like, what's this bullshit? And then I was like, you know what? Star Wars is fucking dead to me. It's dead to me. The trilogy will always exist, even though I don't need to watch 100,000 remakes and special editions. I still have my love for the trilogy, but as far as I'm concerned, and Star Wars is dead to me. And then The Force Awakens came out, and the fanboys were so insanely hyped for that movie. And I was like, no, I'm pretty sure Star Wars sucks now. I'm pretty sure Star Wars will never be good again. I'm pretty sure it's all dog shit. And that era is over, and I will never open my heart up again to be hurt. I'll never let anyone hurt me like that again. And then my friends who had seen Force Awakens twice were like, oh my God, you have to see it. Ugh. We're going to watch it a third time. And I was like, all right, I'll go out and see it with you. And I got to admit, I kind of got my hopes up a little bit. And what I watched was a very mediocre recapitulation of the original trilogy in one movie. I'm like, really? There's another giant planet-shaped Death Star? Really? There's another bad guy with a mask? And you're somehow trying to pass off this whiny emo teenager as the new Darth Vader? Uh-huh. And you're going to trot out these sad, wrinkled Han Solo and Leia? Like, it was just very mediocre. Mm-hmm. But because it was an absolute festering donkey shit, people lost their goddamn minds. Mm. And then they're like, oh, and the next one is Rogue One. Oh, it's going to be so amazing. And they're like, oh, I bet you didn't know how we got those Death Star plans. And it's just all these stories that are just filling in. I bet you don't know how IG-88 got his name. Oh, I bet you didn't know about IG-87. Mm. I'm just done, dude.
The origin story.
I'm just done. I don't care anymore. I don't need any more. Fucking done, dude.
I didn't have the seething hate for the prequels that a lot of other people did.
Mm.
I recognize that they're not the greatest movies, but especially the first one, I had convinced myself as a high schooler that it was really cool and awesome. Plus, we like stayed up late to go see episode one, which to us was like 9:30 or 10 or something.
In Chicago, during the premiere, I spent the night on the pavement in line, like they did in the old days, you know, and everything. So we camped out, spent all night, total strangers, because nobody would go with me. None of my friends would go with me. And so I kind of bonded with the people in the line and all that. And it was a good time. And I think it added, like you said, it gave me a memory that added to it and made the movie, I think, better. I got interviewed by the TV news, you know, because the news came around to see what's up with all these nerds. And I had an Empire Strikes Back, like, sleeping bag from when I was a kid, and I still had it. And, you know, so I got
a crusty Empire Strikes Back sleeping bag.
So I got interviewed, and yeah, I enjoyed Phantom Menace until the day I took it home on video.
Hmm.
And I sat in my room at myself and watched it, and I was like, what is going on? Why am I looking at my watch? You know?
It took me longer than that. I had whatever the first VHS release was, and then I bought the widescreen.
That's the one, the widescreen.
I pre-bought the widescreen release so I could get like a special Toys R Us cover for it.
Yeah.
And like, then I bought it on DVD.
You sit there with your Jar Jar popsicle. That popsicle thing where you sucked on Jar Jar's tongue.
Jesus Christ. The worst
toy ever. You guys went deep on this.
Worst toy ever.
I did not have that.
I didn't have it, but I'm just saying.
But I own multiple copies of episode one on home video.
But what about Force Awakens? You said you saw that. What do you think of that?
Rogue One. Within the first 5 minutes, they go to like 12,000 different planets. And I was like, holy shit, like, I don't understand. Why do we need this? And I just watched it at home. Like, I'll never stop watching Star Wars, but I will never probably go to the theater to see it again, which is probably the saddest indictment I could make of a Star Wars movie. Like, if there's anything you want to go and see in a theater with awesome sound and big screen and
a lot have of people screaming and all that,
it should be a Star Wars movie, but I'll just rent it on low quality DVD.
Nerd heresy.
Yeah.
Heretics.
Now, Ed, you have a little insider knowledge on Rogue One.
Oh, that. Yeah, I don't like to talk about that too much, but it's like... So I know Pablo Hidalgo, the guy that is on the story group in Star Wars and everything. He's the guy that gave me my first Star Wars assignment. I wrote a couple of stories for Star Wars fiction. And 2 or 3 years ago, he came to me on Facebook and was just like... Ed, recommend me some Man on a Mission movies or something. So, like, I was like, oh, there's The Professionals, there's Where Eagles Dare, there's Kelly's Heroes, there's The Dirty Dozen, all that kind of stuff. And he was like, all right, cool, you know, and I gave him this big, long list, and he was like, cool, cool. And he was like, I don't know, you know, you probably won't hear about this again for, like, 2 or 3 years or something, but thanks and everything. And I was like, all right. So then Rogue One comes out, and I just saw the cast photo or something of, like, Diego Luna and... Donnie Yen and the guys all kind of standing around, and Donnie Yen had a bow and all this, and I was thinking of, like, Woody Strode and The Professionals had a bow and all this, you know, and so I asked him, like, hey, was this that thing you asked me about, like, years ago, was that about this? And he was like, yeah, it totally was. It was about Rogue One. So I kind of felt, you know, maybe you're saying so, maybe because I'm a little bit invested in it, that, like, I enjoyed it a little bit more. I don't know, but I felt like it touched on those movies that I liked so much.
Is this still nerd heresy, or are we just talking about Star Wars?
I think
nerd
we're just talking about, yeah. We're well, nerd heresying about...
I'm anti-heresying, I guess. I'm doing the nerd orthodoxy, I guess.
This wraps up another episode of the Six Demon Bag podcast. I'd like to give special thanks to Colleen Green for the use of her song, Why Do You Call Me? Off the Green One album. Just a reminder, you can email us at sixdemonbagpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at sixdemonbagpodcast. Please write us a note or make a suggestion of a topic or anything you'd like us to include or cover. And you can tweet us at sixdemonpodcast.
Hey guys, so you can look up Ed on Facebook or Twitter. Edward M. Ertelak or Ed Ertelak, or you can look up my blog, emertelak.wordpress.com, for news about my latest writings, like my novels, Monstrum Fuhrer, Andersonville, out from Delray. That's about it.
If you want to follow me on Facebook, it's at Jeff C. Carter, and right now you can go to greatjonesstreet.com or their mobile phone app, and you can read 4 of my short stories for free. And now it's time to go into picks. Ed?
Pick for the week. I binge-watched another Netflix show recently, and it's called 13 Reasons Why. And it was it's a dramatization of a 2007 novel about a girl who, a high school girl who commits suicide and leaves, as kind of her legacy, a series of cassette tape recordings, each one addressed to a different kid in her class, a different acquaintance of hers or something, and who had something to do with her demise, her self-destruction and everything, like, that she blames for some reason, or not so much blames, but she can attribute part of the way she felt at the end of her life to them for some reason. So they each get a tape dedicated to them, and there's a kid whose job it is to make sure that they pass the tapes on to each kid. So there's 13 episodes, 13 tapes, And it's kind of, it's dealing with the kid who's on the 12th tape listening to all the tapes now. And it's kind of unravels like a noir murder mystery or something almost. I mean, except you know the killer is, you know who the killer is basically. It's just, how did you get to the suicide? And it's pretty great. It kind of borders on teen melodrama a little bit at times, you know, but of course it will because it's about teens and everything. Mm. But it's a really serious take on it, and for the most part it's great. And yeah, I really recommend it. It was awesome.
I was wondering about that one. I kind of avoided it because it looked weird.
I did too. Like, it looked like it was going to be some kind of My So-Called Life thing or something, and I was going to be
rolling.
Hey,
My So-Called Life was great.
Yeah, but I'm going to be rolling my eyes on it or something. But it wasn't. It was all this girl narrating her life, and the whole story is told non-sequentially, so you kind of have to piece everything together. And yeah, I recommend it. I liked it a lot. Very good.
Cool. My recommendation from this week, or pick, if you will, is, okay, so Psycho is one of my favorite movies, and so I've been watching Bates Motel for its entire run, and it was very stupid and silly for most of its seasons, but this final, I don't know if this is the final season or the second to final season.
It's the final season.
It's the final season, and they are just, it is caught up to the movie, but it's subverting it, and they're just going into some crazy places, and I love every second of it. So good. Bates Motel.
The son and the actor who plays the son and the actor who plays the mother were always the best part of that show.
Well,
and now
much...
that it's focusing just on them, it's really it is really great.
It's the whole show.
Hello, this is the Invisible Man, and my pick for this week is the PlayStation 4 game Persona 5. I'm constantly playing the game to try to find out what happens next, as I did with Personas 3 and 4, but the battles don't necessarily feel like a chore to try to get to the next part of the story. And so I highly recommend Persona 5, and if you've never played a JRPG before, I would say that this is a good one to start with, especially because of its easy mode.
My pick for this week is actually a music video. The song is My Name is Human. The band is called Highly Suspect, and it's kind of a cool rock song. It was nominated for a Grammy, I think, but I like it because the video is a cross between Westworld and The Expanse. So I feel like it's on brand for me to recommend this video, but it's kind of a cool song. It's got a lot of neat sci-fi ideas, and I recommend it. Hmm. What are you doing?
Oh, you tried to eat that thing?
What is? Is it a hot pepper?
Yeah, it's a very hot pepper.
Oh, it's a jalapeno.
And he tried to eat it.
It's not so bad.
So Ryan bit into a hot pepper just as a visual gag. He's doing a bit.
Visual gags on podcasts. Woo!
So one more thing. As you know, some of us write short stories, and I thought it would be fun to have a short story on the podcast. So here's a quick little tale. Take it away, Drew.
Stranglers in the Night by Jeff C. Carter. I hate hospitals. I've been stewing in the swamp of blood and vomit called the emergency room for hours. The sight of bullet holes and burned flesh turns my stomach. I can't stand the mess. A pair of cops roll in and out, chatting with EMTs, flirting with nurses. If they find out who I am, a heart attack is the least of my problems. I keep my head down and suffer in silence. Finally, a nurse waves me into a small room. A junkie arrives in the next bed, babbling and twisting in his restraints. The nurse eyes the thick, braided muscles and veins of my forearms as she struggles with a blood pressure cuff. She turns on the heart monitor and slides out of the room. I watch my heartbeat flail on the monitor while the junkie writhes. His emaciated yellow arms are cratered with track marks. The thought of sticking the needle into my beautifully sculpted arms makes the heart monitor yelp. A doctor strides in and plucks up my chart. He peers over the clipboard to focus on my chiseled arms. He extends a handshake and locks eyes as he clamps down with a familiar surge of bone-crushing power.
So,
he says clinically,
you must be the St. Louis Strangler.
My heart jumps even faster.
Don't worry, I'm the Atlanta Strangler.
Never heard of no Atlanta Strangler, I sneered. The doctor chuckles.
Of course not. People die in hospitals all the time. It's very tidy. I transferred here last week.
But there can't be two stranglers in one city. It's against the code. He raises his hand in deference.
Hey, you don't have to lecture me. Nobody wants a repeat of that hillside strangler business.
The junkie starts screaming.
Nurse, help! They're crazy!
I got it.
The doctor sighs. He snatches the blue privacy curtain and slices the room in half. I hear the familiar gurgles of spit and crunch of cartilage. The doctor murmurs through the curtains as he works.
Headquarters says one of us has to relocate, unless he'd be willing to commute.
No way, I wheeze. The nearest place worth strangling is 2 hours away. I know the city. Where to find people. Where to dump them. He grabs the junkie's chart and glances at his watch.
Time of death, 1:47 a.m. Look, everyone says you're a great strangler. Nobody denies that. But you've got a heart condition. What if you had a heart attack and your victim got away? They get the cops get you, you roll over on the organization. It's too risky.
I love my job, and I ain't quitting. You know stranglers don't retire.
Of course.
He switches off my heart monitor and flexes his powerful hands.
That's why I'm here.